You are listening to Counterterrorism After 9/11, a podcast series by the International Center for Counterterrorism, exploring how our field has changed in the aftermath of the terrorist attacks on September 11th, 2001. Today, Counterterrorism After 9/11 is speaking to Ambassador Janet Alberta, who is currently serving as Ambassador of the Kingdom of the Netherlands to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. As a diplomat in the service of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs for over 20 years, Ambassador Alberta discusses the effects of counterterrorism policies on international diplomacy, her experiences working in the Middle East after 9/11, and what obstacles the global community faces moving forwards. Interviewing her is Toon van Dongen, a senior research fellow and program lead current and emerging threats at ICCT.
Madam Ambassador, thank you so much for making time for us. We're very excited to have you on the podcast, and we're sure that given your experience, you can give an interesting take on the meaning of 9/11 and the impact that those events have had. And the first question that I want to put to you is maybe not a terribly original one, but it is one that many people have asked each other this year around the 9/11 anniversary. And the question is, where were you when you heard what was happening in the US on 9/11?
Yeah, of course, it's thank you very much for, first of all, inviting me. It's really a pleasure to be here. Of course, I remember very well where I was, because I was in Yemen at the time. I actually just arrived as a diplomat, as a first secretary for political affairs, together with my husband and then my firstborn son, who was a month old at that time. We arrived in Yemen like a month before the events of 9/11. I think we arrived somewhere in the beginning of August. And I was with quite a fairly new team working at the embassy in Sana'a. So there were more new people. So we organized a team building session in Mahwit, which is like 3 hours away, little bit east from capital Sana'a. And we were all just having finished our coffee with a beautiful view on the mountains in Yemen. And then a colleague of mine, he actually went to see, he had to go to the toilet. So he walked down in this very old, beautiful building house in Yemen. And he watched the telly and he saw everyone, you know, the people there in that who were catering at the hotel where we were having this session of team building. They were watching in awe and shock and awe at the television, and he saw the first plane actually had just entered the building, and then he called everyone from us. So we all went down and we all watched the telly and we saw the second plane going in. So it was really, I remember that moment very well. I mean, being in such a beautiful location, being in a country, you know, that has a history when it comes to terrorist attacks. We had, of course, in 2000, we had the attack on the USS Cole, but also previously there had been incidents. We looked at each other and my ambassador told me at the time, Janet, you're the security officer. What is your advice? And it was the first time also I was a security officer. I mean, normally that is a job dedicated to the deputy ambassador, but being a political officer working at the embassy in Sana'a, they actually dedicated that task for me. And then together with some colleagues, we made all quite quickly the decision to return back to Sana'a, because at that time, you know, when something so radical, horrific thing is happening, you want to be back at your office. You want to be in touch with the colleagues in The Hague and the colleagues in the region, and you want to really follow the news very, very closely. So we decided to postpone the team building session, and we headed home, and we all headed home in a convoy back to Sana'a. So, and then at that time, you know, a lot of our work and activities was, following the news and talking with Yemenis about it, and being in touch with your, you know, your like-minded colleagues on issues, your not like-minded colleagues on issues. And of course, also, you know, talking with your family, because it was the first posting I did with my family outside at that time. I mean, it's a long time ago now, it's 20 years ago. And it was, we just arrived to be a wonderful family living in four to five years in Yemen. And we did stay there in the end 4 years, but of course it had an impact.
You just mentioned that you were in charge of security. Does that mean that you had to drop everything and deal with the fallout of 9/11?
Yeah, because it's, you know, being a first secretary for political affairs, also dealing with security issues. I was also the one dealing with human rights issues, and I was the one sitting in the security committee of the embassy, so talking with the ambassador and the deputy ambassador and the operational management on what is happening, what are people doing, what are risks, what are threats. I mean, we were there on a team building session trying to figure out what are we going to do for the coming 4 years, and then suddenly you find yourself in a situation where you have to, you have to drop a few things. And you cannot really talk at that time what you want to do in your water programming for 3 or 4 years, because colleagues, they have questions. And a lot of things after 9/11, of course, happened also in terms of traveling even to the region. A lot of, I remember very closely the first time we went back again to the Netherlands. At the time, 20 years ago, you could actually still, I don't like flying. I fly a lot, but I hate flying. So I was always the first one to actually go talk with stewardesses. Can I sit in a cockpit for 1 or 2 hours? And at the time, you know, it was still possible. But then after 9/11, of course, it was not possible anymore. So, yeah, you you do a little bit different things. And I think my first priority was also to really make sure that we had our act together and that we had our network up and running. And of course, it was my second month that I was there. So I still had to meet a lot of people. And then you meet at that time, you give priority to your colleagues that really know what is happening. And you need to then also identify what your priority Yemeni stakeholders are. And when it comes to the Ministry of Interior, when it comes to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, what do they do to protect the diplomatic community? How do they see actually the actions and the steps that are taken by the US government or the international world at that time? So you have a little bit of a different job. Yeah.
Around that time of 9/11, were you ever afraid for your own staff? Was there like a sort of a heightened threat through to the people that you were supposed to protect in a way?
Not really, but as a security officer, you at that time you have to. We didn't really have a large Dutch community, but what you do is you provide also advice to your fellow Dutch compatriots, right? So we had like 8 contact persons scattered around Yemen, so they would be in constant touch with me in satellite phones on what's happening in that area, what do they see in terms of checkpoint closing. And the same responsibility you have for Dutch citizens, you also have that responsibility for staff. And I remember that also already at the time, if you wanted to leave Sana'a and you wanted to go to another area, for example, where we had a team building session, you had to ask for special permission. And you could actually see after 9/11 that the Yemeni authorities, they actually installed more checkpoints. So that means that it became a little bit more bureaucratic to actually get out of the city. So all these kind of steps that are taken, you kind of take them into consideration. And I never really had a specific, not in a time when I was there, that there was a specific book about rogue states, and the name of Yemen was really rapidly included in that list and together in Sudan. Yeah, it was a feeling of apprehension, and you know that something is going to change and that the region will notice, and we will notice it in our work. And we also, as an embassy, traditionally, of course, dealing with development cooperation, we knew that there was to be much more on political reports and writing about security developments and how we wanted to advise the Dutch community in Yemen. So I also remember in my talks with Yemeni authorities that a number of them were actually quite in shock, and they did a lot of outreach towards the international community. There was more contact, particularly also with the Ministry of Interior, to understand or to explain to us how the security sector was working and what they were doing themselves. And also the Ministry of Foreign Affairs was really constantly at that time very active in outreaching to the international community to explain what the official position was of the Yemeni government on on this regard, huh? Because we also saw in some of the streets in the Middle East some demonstrations which you always see, and you also see them somewhere in other parts of the world. But there were also some demonstrations in Sana'a at that time. And the Ministry of Foreign Affairs was really the key partner for us to explain how they dealt with these things. And also the president himself, Ali Abdullah Saleh, at the time, he really did a lot of outreach to the international community. And for my case, I mean, I was political officer. I noticed a little bit in the months to come, in the year to come, that I was focusing much more on the justice sector and the and human rights, rule of law, because Yemen is a country, at the time it was like 80% of all the legal cases were done in a traditional way. There was not really a formal structure, not a formal government. So we spent actually much more time on these kind of rule of law and issues. Also in contact with religious leaders. I mean, that is really something I really did a lot at that time. You know, being an Arabist, speaking Arabic, as being a political officer, I was invited a lot to these tribal Qatju sessions. You sit with people, men or with women, because of course I'm a woman. But I could actually sit in all these Qatju sessions. There were a lot of talks about 9/11 and, you know, the effects later, and also what the Americans did wrong and blah, blah, blah. And these things were very, very important to attend these sessions and really get to know what people really on the ground feel about what's happening in the world. And of course, there was as much disgust of what happens with the two towers as anywhere else.
Do I understand you correctly that in a strange way, 9/11 made the rule of law more important in Yemen then?
Well, I think perhaps for my government, because we have been in the past, traditionally, Yemen has been really important country for us, particularly on development cooperation and traditional programs when it comes to water, education, humanitarian areas. We had large rural integrated development programs at that time, and we had huge Dutch communities there, etc., etc. And in my work, I was dealing with human rights, but we expanded that after 9/11 in really trying to look into what are the, I mean, I hate this word sometimes, what are the root causes behind lawlessness? Yeah? And Yemen, of course, also at the time, and again now, but then in a different way, the president has had his seat in Sana'a. But outside Sana'a, if you would travel there, there was a lot of people who didn't really had their loyalty attached to the president. And that also goes, like I said, with the legal profession. Most of the legal opinions were made in a tribal way. So we wanted to understand much better how the country was functioning, because you can do a lot of things when it comes to decentralization and health, but if you then at the same time, your program is not very effective because you run in a certain court case. I mean, there are a lot of things which I think at the time didn't really, really understand. I mean, the Americans, for example, they had a tribal map. Of course, they had much more staff, the American embassy, but I remember we didn't really have a tribal map so much. Huh? So we tried to really focus much more on how does the country function? And so we paid actually much more focus in that time on the Ministry of Justice, traveling outside Sana'a and meeting judges, and really try to see also what they do with people that return from Afghanistan, for example. Because, of course, a lot of people from Afghanistan, they return to Yemen. So what did they do with them? Yeah? So it was very important for us to actually find out about these developments and these narratives in our context with these Qatju sessions.
There was outreach from Yemen to the outside world, if you will, but it was also outreach from the outside world into Yemen. There was a strong imperative from both sides to understand one another.
Yeah, definitely. And I think since then we have gained a lot of knowledge and expertise. And the fact that we still have a very large portfolio on Yemen, it actually definitely still includes the legal profession and human rights issue, accountability, and really looks much more into issues like impunity and really trying to understand what's happening in a country like Yemen.
That's I think, an interesting observation that plays into another question that I had. I I think it's obvious that recently there's been a lot of criticism of the war on terror and perhaps more generally the way the Western countries have been operating militarily in the Arab and in the Islamic world. But would you say that there's maybe also a brighter side to it? Is there something that changed for the better as a result of 9/11 or the war on terror?
Yeah, I think so. I think we work much more globally together. I mean, the way that you phrase it, I don't think I really agree with that. That, you know, there's a Western country and there's an Islamic world, right? I mean, the fight against terrorism is really a shared phenomena. It's a global phenomena. It doesn't only take place in countries in the Middle East. It doesn't only take place. It doesn't only necessarily come from. And that is, of course, also a discussion I'm having currently, sometimes with religious scholars here in Saudi Arabia, they always keep explaining to me that it's nothing to do with Islam. It's just a global phenomena. And I definitely agree with that. I think that we have gained much more knowledge and much more expertise. And you can also see it in the way that the Netherlands have particularly diplomatically also took up their own gloves. And we have been a very active partner when it comes to the global coalition in the task force on counterterrorism. We have spent a lot of more budget on having colleagues in the region in some of the countries that really deal specifically only with prevention and, you know, these kind of activities and budget that really, yeah, lays down the fundamentals and also try to do something with the root causes. And what I think also really changed that we work much more with actors and countries that we probably would not have worked for before. And like, for example, with Saudi Arabia, which is a key ally for us in the anti-ISIS coalition, which is still a very active coalition. And also recently, my minister, that time Minister Kaag, also met with her Saudi counterpart. And then they talk about the situation in Iraq and Syria and what should we do collectively about this. I think there's also more cooperation among agencies. So we actually work from a much more comprehensive programming.
Right. So the outreach that you could see in Yemen was actually like a reflection of something that then later took place on a broader scale, on a more international level, where various countries were finding each other in that fight against terrorism.
Yeah, but of course there is we are now 20 years away from 9/11, and I keep saying that it also happened before 9/11, but of course 9/11 really hit a target, hit a strategic partner for us, and it's very important that we continue remembering the date. But it's there have been much more instances, and of course when I'm referring to the anti-ISIS coalition, I refer to what happened later with the growth of ISIS after, you know, the fall of Syria and the instability of Iraq, etc., etc. So that's a different coalition where the Netherlands played a different role.
So when did you begin to realize how big the impact of 9/11 was going to be in the respects that you just talked about? Like when did you begin to see that change happening?
I think fairly directly, certainly rather quick in the beginning, because all the hijackers came from the Middle East, 15 of the 19, they're Saudi origin. They were all trained in Afghanistan, and Osama bin Laden also spent time in Yemen as well as parts of his family. I was always, there was a strange feeling attached to it by me. I mean, I think the security prism at that time was going to be central in many of our dialogues and brought us in an area defined by global terrorism. Kind of black and white stereotype sometimes. And of course, 9/11 was followed by more attacks. Madrid, London, Brussels airports, you name it. So it's really become trends. It's there to stay. I mean, it's there. I mean, look at what's happening in the Sahel region. Look what's happening also in Iraq. I mean, we have elections now, but there are still hardcore militants crossing borders. And so it's there to stay with us. The world has not become a safer place.
It is or not, but if I understand you correctly, it has become a place where a lot of actors are more willing to work together to do something about it.
Yeah, that is really very, very positive. I mean, I don't think that we would have had that dialogue with Saudi Arabia like 20 years ago as we are having it today. And it's really, you know, the EU, the European Union, also has a special coordinator on counter-violism and terrorism, Gilles de Kerkhove. I hope I pronounce his name fairly well. He's been in that position for 14 years, and I met him recently here in Riyadh, and he was there with a big team, and he was sharing to us EU ambassadors, you know, what his experience has been. And he really sees there's an opening up in the dialogue. There's also with religious scholars. I mean, it's really opening up dialogue, discourse on also on for example, on books that still have references to Salafist kind of thinking, which is, you know, taken by some young people as a motive to do, you know, violent acts. And the fact that we have that dialogue is really very important. You also have in Europe, you have institutions, and yeah, so it's so important to have that dialogue.
So far, most of the impact that we've been talking about is in the field of foreign affairs, foreign relations, diplomacy, perhaps. But you know the regions where the war on terror took place very well. Could you say something about what changed in the life of, let's say, like an ordinary person on the ground as a result of the war on terror?
I think I already mentioned that Muslims in general, they felt really discriminated whenever they were traveling on planes. And we all seen these movies and all this. Really, in all my narrative, all my discussions later with people, whether I was even in Georgia, because also if you look into the people who traveled to Syria and Iraq, they were all people from parts in Georgia and the Parkisi Valley. People, they felt... discriminated or neglected, not well understood. So a lot of that sentiments that I think that you also have heard here in the Netherlands. And I think, a lot of these countries, they also passed anti-terror legislations. And all these anti-terror legislations also sometimes led to the arrest and the upheaval of people that may have had a completely different opinion. So it's we had a lot of contacts also with civil society activists and telling that they had a lot of concern about these very strict regulations that were being enrolled by some of the countries.
Is the problem perhaps that we have been approaching counterterrorism too much purely as a security issue?
I find it very difficult to give a kind of, because it's not really been my main priority. I know that there have been departments and units that deal only with the fight against terrorism. I'm a diplomat. I would actually say that the room for more diplomacy has actually become more widened and more larger. I think it's if you only focus from a security prism towards the world, then I think you find yourself in the wrong group and definitely not in a group that's yielding results. As a diplomat, I find it really more important to look into into countries, into partners and networks in a more comprehensive way. And my lesson would be actually that we need to have more diplomacy, we need to have more eyes and ears on the ground, and it's for us very, very important to understand what's happening in one country and also understand where the area should be for intervention. And I would say that you can't oppress an ideology by military force, which is a famous saying, and I would agree with that.
I mean, where do we need the approach that you just mentioned the most right now? Like, what would you say are the priority areas where we need to build all these networks in order to adequately counter extremism and terrorism?
I mean, if you look at the world today, I mean, you look into the region currently as well, there's a lot of political instability. For example, look into the Netherlands. We don't really have an embassy open. We have an embassy in Yemen, but most of the staff are not working inside of Yemen, which also has a reason. We don't have an embassy in Syria. We don't have an embassy. We do have an embassy again in Libya, but it's really very important to stay on top of these kind of things and to really stay engaged. And how do you do that? By, you know, you increase your diplomatic footprints. Look into Afghanistan. We have our embassy now in Doha, which is really essential and very, very important that they are back in the region and really hear from other countries, other stakeholders, other partners, what's happening. So I find it difficult to say where should we be? My experience myself is that, you know, governments come and they go. It's very important that you have your policy in place beyond a period of 4 years. Yeah, we need to really expand, actually, I think, our presence and not stay away, not go away after 3 or 4 years. I mean, I find it difficult to say where it should be. We should be actually everywhere these days.
A lot of work to be done then by people such as yourself, really, to keep making connections and build relations.
Yeah, I'm very happy that I'm based in a country like Saudi Arabia, which is also in a transformative mode. And I travel quite a lot. And so I travel up north, I travel up south, I travel east, I travel west, and I'm the eyes and the ears on the ground. Yeah? So I speak with a lot of people that also have their own opinion on what's happening in Saudi Arabia. That is important. And so I get to feel a little bit what the mood is. And if I don't understand what the mood is, I find it difficult to bring an advice to the ministry in The Hague. And the fact that for the obvious reasons we don't have eyes on the ground right now in Syria, I think that is also a concern, because do we really know what's happening? I think we do, because I see good reports by colleagues. But still, it is never the same if you are there physically with boots on the ground.
So, and absolutely. So what are you hearing in Saudi Arabia? Does that make you optimistic about where things are going?
When it comes to the modernization of the country, I am optimistic. I see a lot of reforms. Of course, everyone is talking about reforms that give more space and more room for women to really be an active player in the social and the workforce. That's actually also a fact. I see that the country is also heading towards a more modern course on a moderate course of Islam. Yeah? So the Crown Prince clearly indicated also recently in an interview that it's time now for a moderate form, and there's also even openness to reform some in some of the area when it comes to curricula, also when it comes to codification of legislation. So it's interesting to be here right now. And I hear, of course, a lot of things. And what I can say is that it's a fascinating time now to be here as a diplomat. When it comes to the war on terror, and you see, I mean, for example, what happened in Afghanistan, of course, Saudi has taken now a completely different position than it did like 10 years ago, when they still were one of the two countries, I think, that they recognized the Taliban. And now they are completely opposites. And it's interesting to listen to Saudis on how they view developments in Afghanistan, and how they actually want to work with us to find a solution, and perhaps to bring the Taliban into a more moderate. You have to really give out messages. You need to form an inclusive government. You need to really blah blah blah. So, and then they want to convey that message to the Organization of Islamic Conference, that consists of many Arab Islamic countries, of course. And then, yeah, I mean, I find it it's fascinating to be here.
Yeah, I can only imagine. But does that mean that at least Saudi Arabia, and perhaps the Middle East in general, is becoming a more difficult region for extremist organizations to gain support?
I think where there is a lack of governance, there's always a room for radical organizations to float. And so it's there are still, of course, a lot of countries in the region that have limited governance structures in place. Yeah? I mean, look at Syria, for example. So at the moment that you still have that lack of governance, and you have informal war economies like we have right now in Yemen, I mean, that's a little bit my understanding, then it's easy for groups to take shape and to take place. But the positive thing is that we also have governments in which we are really cooperating hard with in the anti-ISIS coalition, in the global, in this GCTF that I already referred to. We have a lot of extra contacts, and that is a positive note. So there's a lot of eagerness and cooperation and willingness from these governments in the region to work with us, because they see it as it's a global phenomena.
What would we, as let's say the international community, need in order to fulfill the potential that you're describing? What would have to happen so that 20 years from now we can say, hey, look, all these sort of modernizing tendencies went on, and extremism is like is behind us now, is a part of history.
I can't imagine it will be back in, it would be good, but you know, like I said, there's a rationale for having more diplomats. I think that's really very important. I think we have also learned that we need to emphasize much more on education. It's important to dialogue also with people that we might actually not consider legitimate. Think a little bit out of the box. And like I said earlier, I mean, don't oppress an ideology by military force. Let's take it as a comprehensive approach. So in that sense, we have learned a lot, I think. I think we are doing it, but we just need to continue it. And I think only having a war on terror, while forgetting there are other parts of stories and other parts of countries, that's also a very important entry path into having a good dialogue with partners here. Because if you only come with a security agenda, then you will find a lot of partners here in the region that are really actually not that confident to help you in a fully forceful way.
And what are the main obstacles? Because you mentioned lack of governance, that is one. Are there any other obstacles that could stand in the way of those sort of modernizing tendencies taking over and undermining the appeal of extremist messages?
I think there are, I mean, depends a little bit per country on where you are based as well. I already mentioned political instability, weak governance structures. I mentioned the informal war economy. I mean, I just came from South Sudan, completely a country with a big informal war economy, very easy to facilitate illegal financing of groups. Of course, you also have that in parts of the Red Sea region, Hawala. You must have heard of that. So, I mean, if you don't really have the right eyes and ears on the ground, and I mean on the ground, not in the air, on the ground, really get to understand what's happening in the country, what makes people tick, and who's who and who's doing what, that is important. And it's really, and I think, of course, it's always a tough battle as a government to increase your workforce, because and I think an obstacle that I said already before, but I think in that sense we are embedded quite well as a ministry, or you need to keep your staff alert all the time and don't decrease or close embassies, all these kind of things.
Well, I think that gives us a very, very interesting perspective, especially because, like, we at ICCT are actually used to looking at terrorism as a security issue. So I think I speak for ICCT as well as for many people who are listening now, that your perspective is very valuable, because it shows us that security issues cannot be dealt with through security measures alone.
Yeah, so sometimes it's also an advice to the ICCT or your networks. Always do visit an embassy if you are there making, for example, country profiles. Eh? I've had security organizations, security think tanks knocking on my door and passing me on like papers, one or two, saying that, do you agree with this profile? And I always thought it's sometimes a little bit as a security agenda, and I always added information. So I really want to encourage you to, and I think that you do, but really encourage you to get in close touch with the embassy and the political departments there, because I think together, I mean, we need to have a common analysis and a common understanding, common strategy. We can learn, and we can learn so much from each other.
Well, we'll take that suggestion to heart, and the next time we will find ourselves in a position to do that, we will definitely follow your advice on that, because I think that we at ICCT also are part of that whole constellation of actors that is working together, and that also means that we perhaps also sometimes need to get a perception of the problem that's a little broader than maybe we're used to traditionally. Well, on that note, Madam Ambassador, thank you so much for your time and your insights. I Enjoyed listening to you. I think I speak on behalf of our audience if I say that this gives us a very different perspective on the whole matter of 9/11 and its impact. So thank you again very much. And as I said, the next time we feel we should be contacting an embassy, we will.
Ahlan wa sahlan, as I say in Arabic. You're most welcome.
I think I got that one.
Very good, very good.
This has been Counterterrorism After 9/11, a new podcast series from the International Center for Counterterrorism. For more insight, find us at icct.nl. Stay tuned for more episodes of Counterterrorism After 9/11.